We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Michael Lev and Alec White, recording from the dungeons of McHale Center like we do to start off the week. Guys, last time we had a podcast here, everything was all hunky-dory, the Arizona Wildcats. They were just coming off a 35-30 win over Colorado. Things are a little bit different this time around. Arizona falling to Washington 51-27, and it was an interesting game because Arizona led at halftime. Everyone thought, maybe the Wildcats can do this. I thought, you know, heading into this game that it would be a close game all the way down to the fourth quarter. Washington completely ran away with it. We were just talking to Kevin Sumlin. What did you guys take away out of Kevin Sumlin? What was something that jumped out to you guys at his press conference?
Well, not necessarily Kevin Sumlin per se. I can get to him, but I think Khalil Tate put it best Saturday night. I believe it was Khalil Tate when he said it was a reality check for the team in the way that they got out-coached, they got out-played, they committed a lot of mistakes. Kevin Sumlin said today, the margin of error this team has is very small, and there were too many. They had a Jamari Joyner's fumble. They had the holding call against Thomas Reed on J.J. Taylor's touchdown that got called back.
Which is unnecessary.
Yeah, absolutely unnecessary because J.J. was going to score. Thomas Reed was out of the play.
Yeah.
And when that happened, but you just talk about the errors that someone was mentioning today and on Saturday night after the game, and there were just too many for Arizona that you didn't necessarily see in the previous games or those that they committed and were just able to overcome. But
that that J.J. Taylor touchdown, that was a right stick and a circle button. he put the juke move on the first defender, and then he spun into the end zone. It was a beautiful play, but yeah, I think that you're right, Alec. This team doesn't have that margin for error. Kevin Sumlin said it today. He also said about a bunch of different things that it's very week to week in this world. When you're I've used this term before. When you're in the middle class of college football, which is where I would put Arizona, things change from week to week. It depends a lot on the opponent. You know, you can't afford to make a lot of mistakes. You know, they kind of had the quote-unquote easy part of their schedule in the front half of the season, and now the tough part is kicking in.
Here's my thing, though. Reality check. Was Washington really a reality check? Because I feel like if there was any point in time this season where Arizona had a reality check, it was their first game of the season at Hawaii. They were favored to win that game, and I thought they would win that game. And then they gave up, was it almost 500 yards of offense to Hawaii?
It was more than that. I think it was almost 600. Mm-hmm.
It was almost 600? Was it 595?
Something like that, yeah.
So you give up almost 600 yards of offense to Hawaii. Defense looked bad. Khalil Tate, had a rough start to that game. Out of all the times where at this point in the season, the loss to Washington was a reality check. I wasn't buying it.
Maybe there can be more than one reality check in a season, number one. Number two, you have to put it into context. They had won the previous four games. A couple of those games were really close. Maybe against the two worst teams in the Pac-12 South. Now you're talking just about a different caliber of club, and you have to measure yourself against this higher level of team. I know that Washington had already lost two Pac-12 games, but watching them every single play against Arizona, you could see the difference, like how well coached their defense was, for example, how disciplined they were defensively, like not giving Khalil Tate any of the running lanes that he's used to having, not letting him escape to the side. When he would do that, he'd get sacked. I mean, they knew what they were doing. They were well-schooled. They had extremely talented quarterbacks and wide receivers who made some amazing plays in one-on-one situations. And, I like that term. I think it's a good way to describe the situation, the reality check. I know what you're saying because Lorenzo Burns said the very same thing about the Hawaii game. But maybe this is just the second one along the way. Maybe there's going to be another one coming at some point down the road.
What was the most disappointing part of that game Saturday night?
To me, going into that fourth quarter, it was a one-possession game. I think if you told everybody going in beforehand, hey, you're going to be playing Washington, you're going to have almost 50,000 fans at Arizona Stadium, and it's going to be one possession going into the fourth quarter, and maybe Washington's winning by one possession, I think everybody would have signed up for that. The disappointing
Absolutely.
Part to me was the way that fourth quarter collapsed. Arizona just couldn't find enough offensively. You had the interception, Tate, especially late in that game that got ended up him being taken out of the game in favor of Gunnell. The offense just sputtered. You had a couple punts, turnovers. All that momentum that you had in that first half seemingly disappeared after about two to three possessions in the start of that fourth quarter.
Well, and it was almost a miracle that Arizona was up at halftime because, Lev, you could chime in on this. I felt like Washington should have been up by three touchdowns at halftime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kevin Sumlin used that same word. He said it was almost a miracle that they were up, which I think is part of the reason he didn't use timeouts at the end of the first half to try to get the ball back, because I think he was like, you know what, we've got the lead. Let's not mess anything up here at the end. Let's go into the locker room and regroup. It's hard to remember that it was a one-score game heading into the fourth, or what, 14 seconds into the fourth quarter after they made the field goal to make it 27-20 because of how the fourth quarter unfolded. Arizona obviously had been a really good fourth quarter team up to that point, but I think the dam kind of broke for the defense. They got worn out. You could see they were sort of dispirited looking to me at the end of that game. Washington, not only were they hitting those pass plays down the field, but they did a really good job of stressing the edges of the Arizona defense with the run game. A lot of pitch plays. A lot of, like, they do a play where it was a fake jet sweep and they'd pitch it out. Or they would fake to the fullback and pitch it out. And they would pull number 72, Trey Adams, who's probably going to play on Sundays, their left tackle, as a lead blocker on those plays. And they were just, the way I put it in my five takeaways was outmanned and outflanked. And it really had the effect of wearing down the Arizona defense. Obviously, I think there was a cause and effect for that, though. What led up to that point? The offense struggling, the offense turning the ball over, the offense and special teams putting the defense in a bunch of bad situations where they had to defend short fields, and I think it eventually caught up with them.
And to add on to Lev's point there about the defense looking dispirited and disheartened at the end, I think we can point to the holding call against Thomas Reed, that call back the touchdown, you end up settling for a field goal, and that next possession, Washington gets the ball, they go right down the field.
Boom, boom,
four,
boom.
Four plays, 75 yards, just like that. It could have been a three-point game, and now you're looking at a 14-point game in favor of Washington.
Serve your heart out.
Yeah.
Really. One thing that a lot of people have been commenting on, and Alec, as you, get more into, your role here at the Arizona Daily Star, we got our ears to the streets. We're always, listening to what Arizona fans have to say. And, you go into the comment sections, you can see what Arizona fans are really complaining about, and it's the same thing that's been going on for the last, 2 years now, quarterback play. Khalil Tate against Colorado, 404 passing yards, probably his best passing game. No, it was his best passing game as an Arizona Wildcat. And you think, okay, under the bright lights on national TV against a big-time opponent in Washington, will we see Mr. October, Khalil Tate, come back to life? Will we see another stellar performance by him? 13 of 25 passing, 184 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. Now, he was sacked four times, and he was pressured many, many times as well. You also have to fault the offensive line because they didn't look too good against Washington. But, I thought Khalil Tate really took a step back as a quarterback, and Kevin Sumlin said that he just didn't play well last week.
You go back to the mental errors. Some of those plays you see Khalil Tate make, you're just razzle-dazzled and you're awed. And then on the flip side of that, you go and you just look at those, some of the plays he makes. For instance, the fumble touchdown where he's tries to go from the right hand to the left hand to get rid of the ball and it ends up throwing it backwards. You just go, why? Yeah. And you talk about the offensive line play. Well, he had some holes that he could step, if he stepped up into the pocket, that he could scramble, maybe pick up, you know, a few yards, you know, slide, get a 3 yard, 4 yard gain, and it wouldn't be bad. But instead, he's trying to escape to the edges because that's where he feels he is most dangerous, throwing on the run. But Washington contained him on the edge, and he never really understood that throughout the game, and he just kept making the same mistake over and over
and
again.
And you could see, you know, linebackers or even safeties, the way they would, like you said, corral him or box him in. And even if he would take a step forward, he was going to run right into a Washington defensive tackle. So he saw that, thought, okay, I'm going to take a step forward, but I'm going to roll out. And as soon as he rolled out, there's an outside linebacker or a safety waiting for him. Yeah. So I don't know. I agree with you, Alec. I think, you know, his presence in the pocket, he could have done a lot better with his footwork. But, man, it just seemed like no matter where Khalil Tate was going to go, he was going to get bottled up either way.
Here's the part that I don't understand. And Lewis Tillman, the color commentator for FS1, mentioned this throughout the broadcast, is he's a senior at this point. How is his game awareness not at a higher level? I mean, we again saw him run out of bounds to take a sack. I mean, that's happened, what, half a dozen times maybe?
Yeah.
This year, it's the easiest. They give you an out as a quarterback. All you have to do, you can throw, like we've talked about, you can throw the ball into the stands, and you get to go back to the original line of scrimmage. You know, that situation, it's 3rd and 5 at the 25-yard line. And he's backpedaling. He switches to his left hand. Well, I mean, even if I had mentioned this somewhere, even if he had somehow been able to chuck the ball with his left hand at, you know, to out of balance, there's no way he would have gotten it back to the original line of scrimmage, which is what he would have to do. And even then, he was still within the tackle box. So it would have been a intentional grounding penalty anyway in a loss of 15 yards. It turned into something even worse than that. Because of that decision, that's what I don't get. Like, he should know better at this point in his career. I called him the confounding quarterback in my 5 takeaways, and he just is. I don't know what to make of him. Even still, I've seen every game that he's ever played, every snap that he's ever played. Talked to him multiple times, and I don't know. He's an enigma. Let's put it that way. Hey, I thought the most interesting thing from the press conference today was the discussion about Grant Gunnell. And yeah, a red shirt. For those who haven't heard it yet or haven't seen the news, you know, Kevin Sumlin said, we're not redshirting him. Then there never was a plan to redshirt him. They're not, you know, looking at the games played numbers for Grant. He's up to 3 now. If he plays in 5 games, you know, this will be this will not be a redshirt year. He'll have 3 years of eligibility after this one. What do you guys think about that?
To me, I think if the plan, based on what Kevin Sumlin said today, that the plan going into the season was that Gunnell was going to be the backup quarterback, I don't mind burning the red shirt if you're going to use him, you know, to the correct way to try and win games. Like, if they had taken Khalil Tate out maybe earlier in the game, you give Gunnell a chance to spark a comeback, then I'm fine with that. But the way they used him against Washington, where it's garbage time, you could have put anybody else in at quarterback and the end result would have been the same. Yeah. But now you're essentially burning a game off of his red shirt because the game's out of reach. And to me, I don't think that that's a great plan.
Yeah, you know, garbage time is great if you're up by, you know, 5-6 touchdowns because, you know, you put in your backup quarterback. He doesn't have to worry about playing catch up or, you know, attempting, you know, to come in for a comeback. Putting him in against NEU, completely understand. Putting him in against UCLA, I completely understand because he's starting that game. You know, but like you said, Alec, you're already down by, what, how many points was it at that time?
24.
So you're down by 24 points with, what, 5 minutes to go when he come into the game? At that point, you're thrown in the white towel. You're saying, you know what, this game is over with. You know, we're just going to get him in and get him some reps. But what's going to happen if, you know, we get towards the end of the season and Kevin Sumlin is looking at, okay, well, Khalil Tate is hurt. I got to find our next quarterback. I got to put in Grant. you would want to have that extra game in the back pocket to say, oh, man, look at that. We made it through the whole season, and Grant Gunnell only played three games. We can actually redshirt him and save him a whole another year of eligibility, and we can use him year after year after year moving forward. I just think it was head-scratching, but I guess that's why I'm doing a podcast and not coaching football.
Maybe that's the reason they keep playing him, because they're going to burn the redshirt at some point. I think that's what we're leading to, because we don't know if Khalil Tate's healthy. Kevin Sumlin said he doesn't really know if Khalil Tate's healthy. Yeah, they're working with the training staff week in and week out, but nobody really knows besides Khalil Tate himself what percentage he is at. And we went through the same, you know, movie last year. Khalil Tate's going to try to play in every game. Yes, he did sit out against UCLA, but even when he's hobbling around, Khalil Tate's going to try to be out on that field. And so I think you're just going to end up having to burn the redshirt, because Gunnell's going to need to play at some point if Khalil's hurt, especially as we get later in the season with no bye weeks.
Well, and you know, Kevin Sumlin said, we're not at the halfway point of the season. You know, we've been, you know, during training camp, going all through all this, you know, we're at 11 weeks right now. So they don't see this as the halfway point in the season. But if you're left 11 weeks in, you're going to get banged up.
Right. The point he's trying to make is that no one is 100%.
Yes.
And this whole, like, idea that Khalil's injured, or I don't buy it. I just don't buy it as an excuse. I mean, as Kevin Sumlin said, everybody's banged up. And it's football. And you got to learn to play through stuff. And you got to adjust your game accordingly. Whether he's 100% or not, I think it's irrelevant. You know? I mean, here's what we'll talk about USC later in the week more, but I just want to make this point real quick. I would like to see the USC of the Khalil Tate of 2017 against USC reappear at the Coliseum. You remember that guy who cried as he left the field that night because they lost, because he wanted it that badly? He rushed 26 times in that game, which is a career high, for 161 yards. He left it all out on the field. That's what I want to see this Saturday, whether he's injured or not.
Emotion.
I'm off my soapbox.
Okay. All right, we'll talk more USC throughout the week, and we'll actually talk about USC coming up in just a little bit as we look back at an interesting weekend of Pac-12 football. Let's look back, you know, at this past weekend. First of all, let's talk about the school up north, the ASU Sun Devils. Lev, I know you're eager to talk about them.
Oh yeah, I gotta appease my fan base, man.
But, you know, ASU, I thought they were going to lose that game.
Yeah,
you
so
know,
did I.
Washington came out and punched them in the face.
I called the win. But
Job, rookie.
Rook. All right.
It was dicey, for sure. Herm Edwards' team, they don't turn the ball over. They play a lot of close games, and they win a lot of close games because they don't make a lot of mistakes. And they have this magic man, this freshman quarterback, Jaden Daniels, who comes up clutch. You talked about the collapsing pocket. He did a great job before they let him loose for the winning touchdown run, which obviously was a bad play defensively. They did a really good job of hemming him in. You know what he did? He took the check down. He did it time and again. He checked the ball down to Eno Benjamin. There were times in this last game where that option was available to Khalil Tate, and he didn't take it, and I don't know why. I couldn't pretend to know why, because it looked like he was even looking in the direction of that receiver, and he just wouldn't throw it. Is it going to be a big play? No, but is it going to be 3 or 4 yards and kind of keep you on schedule? Yes. I thought Jaden Daniels showed a really good feel for that before, obviously, the dramatic, you know, winning touchdown at the
helicopter.
End. Yeah.
That was awesome, wasn't it?
He's a great play.
As others have said, as far as Arizona is concerned, that kid's going to be a problem for them for at least the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. ASU, now top 15 program?
I put them 19th and got a lot of criticism for that because apparently I'm not showing them enough love.
But that's impressive because for Herm Edwards.
It's very impressive. I wouldn't go that far because there have been a lot of close games, and they lost at home to a Colorado team that's looked pretty bad since then. I mean, in retrospect, given what – and we can talk about this game. Given what Colorado's done since, that's a pretty bad loss for ASU.
Speaking of Colorado, I think we should keep this very brief because there's just not much to talk about. Oregon just completely beat the pants off Colorado. Enough said.
Well,
not even close.
No,
45-3.
I'm going to give you that list of point totals though allowed by Oregon since the Auburn game. 6-3, 6-7, 3 Wow. I don't care who you're playing. Like, I don't care what the caliber of your schedule is. That's in today's college football, to pull that off, that's incredible.
Oregon, now they over the defense.
Now they got a bye week. No, I'm sorry. Now they got Washington. Going to Washington after an extra day off, the Friday game, the 12:30 ABC contest. This is it. This is it. Win that game if you're Oregon, and you got a really – you got a shot at making the playoff. I don't know. I think it's going to be like a Big Ten style of game, hard-hitting, low-scoring, based on what we've seen from these two teams. Mm-hmm. Good one.
Also, really great, great quarterback matchup too.
Herbert versus
Jacob Eason versus Justin Herbert, two of the best quarterbacks in the Pac-12.
The prototypes squaring off against each other.
A lot of NFL scouts, I'm sure, will be at that game.
Oh, yeah.
All right, before we talk, Arizona's next opponent in USC, another
we got one more.
Schmacking Utah beating Oregon State 52-7. Okay. Beavers were all high and mighty after their win on the road against UCLA, and then put right back into their place.
It's the hardest thing to do if you're a young team or a team that's just learning how to win, how to handle winning. Now, obviously, Oregon State didn't handle it well. And Utah is a team that just they're all about business. You know, they don't mess around. They've probably been the most consistent – since they joined the league, you could make a case they've been the most consistent team in the South. That's because they always have a good defense. They always have good special teams. They're physical. They run the ball. They don't usually make a lot of mistakes.
Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss.
Yeah.
Those two guys are difference makers.
Moss had 121 yards of rushing, two touchdowns.
And how many carries? It was like four carries, yeah. Maybe five.
Had a 91-yard run, touchdown run to open the second quarter. Just kind of Utah took off from there.
Can't even do that in a video game.
Did you know that Zach Moss is, I believe he's related to Santana Moss?
Interesting.
I think they're cousins. I'm going to look this up while we're talking. But go ahead, Justin.
What I was saying about Utah, though, is when they're healthy, are they the best team in the Pac-12?
Maybe.
I mean, they make one hell of a case for it.
In the South?
I mean, definitely in the South. Yeah. I think there's no question when they're healthy, they're the best team in the South. But, I mean, Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss, I mean, two playmakers, guys that, when they're in for Utah, Utah's a completely different team. When both those guys are out, Utah looks average
ordinary.
Or normal.
Zach,
very
Moss,
ordinary.
Yeah. Zach Moss is a cousin of Santana Moss, All-American at Miami, and Sonoris Moss, who has also played at Miami and played in the league a little bit. So his full name is Zacchaeus Malik Moss.
Zacchaeus.
Zacchaeus.
It's a hell of a name. It's a hell of a name. I didn't know that.
I feel like he should go with Zacchaeus.
I know.
That's his name, right? That would really make you stand out.
But especially in the NFL.
His performances make him stand out, too.
All right. USC, Notre Dame.
Yep.
This is a game that made Lou Holtz smile at the end of it because Fighting Irish won 30-27. USC, did they get screwed by the refs towards the end? That's what Twitter told me.
I'm finally seeing this roughing the passer call, and it was a terrible call. Was it slightly late? I mean, you guys can look at it right here. Was it slightly late? Yeah. Did he hit him that hard? No.
No.
Didn't land on him. Kind of
didn't really land
side.
On him.
You that was a home, that was a home crowd call.
Yeah. Yeah. You can make that case. You know, USC played pretty well at Notre Dame. Lose by 3 points. Some questionable calls. They had only two penalties. They had no turnovers.
Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah. I mean, he's just one of three. I mean, Michael Pittman's leading the, leading the team in receptions and yards. They've got Amon-Ra St. Brown. They've got Tyler Vaughns. Arizona's been vulnerable against the pass. This is a tough matchup.
Yeah,
it's a really tough matchup. We'll get into it more later in the week, but I don't like just as much like I didn't like Washington losing, the previous week against Stanford. I don't like the fact that USC played really well in a really tough road environment, and now they're coming back home. And they're trying to save their coach's job and all that stuff.
Especially since Arizona usually doesn't fare too well when they travel to the Coliseum.
Tough matchup. And the other thing that concerns me is Marquis Stepp. They announced last night that Malapai had knee surgery. He's going to be out a little while. Of course, they're USC. They have great running backs in reserve. And this kid Marquis Stepp, who originally committed to Notre Dame, flipped to USC, ran like a man possessed in that game last week. He's one of those 240-pound bulldozers where you, like, one guy can't bring him down. And I know that they're an air raid team, quote unquote, but after seeing that film of how Washington was able to run to the edges, maybe we'll see a little bit of student body right, student body left, like old school USC against Arizona. Wouldn't surprise me if they switch things up a little bit for this matchup.
Well, I mean, they haven't been that way under Clay Helton.
No, not really. But like I said, if you watch what Washington did in the second half against SC, I feel like we're going to see a little bit of that.
USC is, they're one of those teams that they can every now and then change their formula week to week depending on who they play because they have the skill level and the players
personnel.
And the personnel to be able to mix and match what
Absolutely.
They do.
Should be a good one. Coming up later on in the week, we're going to be doing our midseason awards and also grading Arizona and kind of doing our midseason report card. I know Kevin Sumlin said it's week 11 for them, but for us, it's midseason. So we'll do kind of a midseason breakdown of the current state of the Arizona Wildcats, and we'll also be getting more into the upcoming game against the USC Trojans. Don't forget to download the Wildcaster app on the App Store and Google Play and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts. For Lev, for Alec, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.